Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
And welcome, everybody, to Lost in the Static. I am Scott Murray.
You are. It sounded like you hesitated, like you couldn't remember for a second there.
It takes me a little while to recover from work to, you know, remember.
I am Josh Hadley.
I am not a drone. I am not a pushover.
You are another brick in the wall, though.
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't think I'm another brick in the wall.
Well, just do the Adam and Eve promo, and then we'll talk about... I was trying to hint at something to go into.
Don't need no education. Don't need no thought control.
You do need AdamandEve.com, though.
You're right, we do. And when you're shopping at AdamandEve.com, when you've picked out the movie, lingerie, cute thing, sexy thing, insertable thing, whatever, when you've picked out what you want, at the very end, use the promo code STATIC, STATIC. You'll get 50% off of one item, free shipping in the United States, 3 free DVDs.
Not one, not two, not four, but 3.
1, 2, 5, 3, sir, 3. Okay, sorry. No more Monty Python.
And then a free mystery gift.
And
just use the promo code STATIC.
And we get a little cash. Well, there are also Amazon links on 1201, and you can also go to RPG
drive-through stuff.com.
And if you look up the Systemless Settings Bundle, it is made and sold by my friend Al right here in Appleton, Wisconsin. And it's a really cool bundle of places and things where you can take your D&D characters that's not necessarily D&D. And a few new rules there and a few interesting twists on old games. And just when you order it, tell Al that Lost in the Static sent you and you get a free light bulb joke.
Mm-hmm. And now, like I was hinting at with the whole Pink Floyd thing, sometimes when something happens, whether it's a TV show, a band, or whatnot, and there's a creative shift, a key member leaves and another person comes in. Like, you and I were arguing, who was first, Roger Waters or Sid Barrett?
I think it was Sid.
Yeah, we were like, wait a minute.
I apologize.
There was a dramatic shift in the style of the band, though.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about landmark albums and showing that shift in the style, compare Dark Side of the Moon to, I can't remember the name of the album, but it's the one with Learning to Fly on it. Or really any of their more modern stuff like Pulse or anything like that. It's still distinctly Floyd, but at the same time, very different.
It's moved, for lack of a better way to put it.
It moved.
And
excuse me, but there is a rumble.
Yeah, I know. I'll take that out in post.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And like, I'm thinking of like certain bands. There are certain major rock bands that all of a sudden, one singer leaves, another singer comes in, and everything changes. Like, probably the one that everyone's going to know the most would be the differences in Van Halen.
Yes.
We're not even going to deal with the Gary Cherone stuff, because even Van Halen doesn't want to deal with the Gary Cherone era.
Right.
So, and we're going to talk David Lee Roth versus Sammy Hagar.
Right, and let's be honest. You're a David Lee Roth fan, I'm a Sammy Hagar fan. And to give you guys an idea of what we mean by a different...
Just the entire tone is different.
Here is David Lee Roth, Van Halen, doing one of their biggest hits, Jump.
No.
Okay, so that was that.
And that was very 80s, very kind of harder pop. It's not really metal, but it was harder pop. It was less rocky, very much more pop with a rock twinge.
Right, right. And it was extreme. It was about as 80s as you get.
Well, that fucking keyboard, man. I mean, you and I were ghost. We were like air keyboarding that right here, you know?
You know, I think that was played on the most 80s instrument ever. A guitar.
Oh, my God.
So. But nonetheless, then we move into the world's greatest decade ever. And Crystal Pepsi picks it up. And we end up with Van Halen sounding like this with Sammy Hagar. Not only do I remember Crystal Pepsi using that song, but I also remember that great music video of the text. Exactly. Over meh shots, but it was really cool at the time.
And that signifies the difference. I don't like this era. I don't like the Van Hagar era, but at the same time, they were more quote serious musicians, and they were quote rock. Now, instead of pop,
they were a little bit more on the rock side than pop. They were a little bit less driven by
hedonism. Because come on, David Lee Roth was hedonistic.
Fine, hedonistic. You went whatever. I won't finish my point.
Because David Lee Roth was hedonism. I see this Van Halen as more trying to be a real musician and be taken seriously.
There was a lot more musicality to For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge than there was,
and OU812
others, and OU812 and such. But you know, there was a whole lot more musicality to the Hagar years, and they were a lot less driven by "I'm the vocals guy, yeah, I do cocaine." And you know, David Lee Roth had it was almost like metal meets the Beach Boys sound to him.
Yeah.
And he carried that with him into his solo career, and Van Halen went, okay, let's do something a little bit more serious.
Where one of the weird things was, this is one of the reasons that I have so much trouble taking Van Hagar seriously, Scott. Sammy Hagar's solo stuff before Van Halen was just like David Lee Roth. I can't drive 55, and let's get drunk, and let's find whores, and it was kind of the same thing, so it was kind of weird when it seemed like when they first, hey, we're picking up Sammy Hagar, seemed like, oh, they're just replacing David Lee Roth, same kind of guy. And then he went, no, now I'm a real musician, okay? I've done my goofy fun stuff, and now I'm a real musician.
So you have a problem with people that change styles?
I have a problem with it because it seemed, and I don't know Sammy Hagar, obviously, it seemed like a either what he did prior to Van Halen was all a front and he was always a serious musician, or he was just fronting being a serious musician when he joined Van Halen. Or it could be this, he and like Eddie and all that, they found a center where they all worked.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what happened. I mean, you mix oil and eggs and a few other things and it becomes mayonnaise, which is nothing like any of them and considerably more delicious. And I think that's exactly what happened with Van Halen. Plus, Josh, I hate to tell you this, but people do change. People can change their minds and they can change their styles. And maybe Sammy Hagar went, okay, I've done that. I've had, that was that time. Now I want to get serious about my music. And maybe this new start with Van Halen is a chance to do that. And I think that may be what happened as well, because I love that musicality behind Van Halen in the, what you call the Van Hagar years.
You've never heard the term Van Hagar before? Right. We've been calling it that since he joined him.
No, it's because
I saw that in Rolling Stone for the first time when he first joined them. They called it Van Hagar.
I don't read Rolling Stone. I never have.
Well, but sometimes you just have two people, three people, whatever. They need each other to work. Look at like Meatloaf and Jim Steinman.
Yeah.
Jim Steinman wrote all of Meatloaf's big songs from Bat Out of Hell and whatnot. And then they broke up. And then Jim Steinman made a bunch of albums that nobody remembers. Meatloaf made a bunch of albums nobody remembers. Then they get back together and they start making hits again. That it's these two guys don't work separately. Does that make any sense? That Jim Steinman needs Meatloaf and Meatloaf needs Jim Steinman.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So sometimes that's what happens. Just they don't work separately. So maybe with Van Halen, Sammy Hagar needed a, in quotes, calming influence of what Van Halen was trying to do at the time.
Well, let's talk about your one. This is, and we are going to move away from music here.
Yeah,
but Josh wanted this example in, and I think it fits. Iron Maiden. Let's start with, is this their first?
This is from their second album, Killers, but this is their first singer, Paul Di'Anno. Go back to the beginning of the song, and it's so unlike Iron Maiden that people identify Iron Maiden with Bruce Dickinson and his voice and his style, not Paul Di'Anno, who was the singer on the first two albums.
And so this is Wrathchild. Okay.
It doesn't really sound like Iron Maiden traditionally should.
It sounds like a very well-rehearsed garage band.
That's basically what they were at that point, too. You could even hear some of the acoustics were not as great because they didn't have a decent recording studio at that point.
Right, but I mean, just stylistically, too, they found that groove that worked and they stuck with it and then kind of crafted the vocals and the rest of the song around it. I've used this, instrumentality, the ability to really, you can see that I've known some women that were absolutely incredible at playing the violin. Lindsey Stirling is an incredible violinist. She's wonderful. However, when it comes to truly playing an instrument and moving it to something else, if you can imagine,
like
going from playing a cello to becoming Yo-Yo Ma.
Okay.
Going from playing guitar to becoming Jimi Hendrix. There's a transcendence there, centered around the instrument. And you can hear that these bands have made that transcendence. And I'm not saying that Van Halen is as great as whomever you want to compare them to. If you like them, you like them. Yeah, if you like them, you like them.
If you like Sammy Hagar over David Lee Roth, then that's what you like.
But that's what I'm saying is you can't deny that there was a transformation around
their
instruments.
There was a major shift. Yeah. There was a major shift in style and almost goals. Because, like I said, in the David Lee Roth era, they just wanted to be a rock band. It seemed like in the Van Halen era, they wanted to be more than that. And that's a lofty goal. I'm not shitting on them for that.
Right. So anyway, this is Iron Maiden.
And then, we played this the other week, but Wasted Years, this is probably the defining Bruce Dickinson
era. And it's one of your favorite songs. So I love this song. I just recalled it back, and here it is, Iron Maiden, Wasted Years. But yeah, even in that,
not being a Maiden fan, you can hear the difference in the totally different styles between the Paul Di'Anno era and the Bruce Dickinson era, can't you?
And like I said, what I think the difference is the kids grew up for one thing, and they learned to really play their instruments. I mean, just the opening riff of the song, the first one,
Wrathchild.
We just kind of had the drums beat in. We formed a nice little groove that we stuck with, and it worked. And it was a good groove, and it was nice.
It's the kind of thing you can rock out to at a club.
Exactly. And then when the second song came in, the Wasted Youth.
Wasted Years.
Wasted, whatever. Who cares? It's Iron Maiden. Nobody likes them. You started with this guitar, and you started with a beautiful lead, and you built the bass around it. You built the beat around it, and it was layered into place. And then there was a tonal shift, just where it just goes thunk, and then boom, you hit that B part of the song. So yeah, there was a huge musical difference, and I'm not saying that any band can lay that on one particular member at all, because they all kind of had to grow up.
But sometimes, like in the case of Iron Maiden, the Paul Di'Anno songs really only work with him. On some of their live albums, Bruce Dickinson has sung like Wrathchild and stuff. They just sound wrong. They don't sound right because it's not his style. You know what I mean?
Right.
You need that's Paul Di'Anno for those.
Yeah, you may have a new member that comes in and becomes
dominant?
No, not dominant. My brain hurts. They become the thing that starts the change, that starts the, I'm trying to think of the word in chemistry.
Flash
everybody's
point.
No, everybody's shouting at me because it starts
Scott,
with an E.
Scott!
Yeah. But anyway, they become the enzyme that starts the reaction. There we go. So that's the way it is. And moving away from music for a minute, TV is no different.
Oh, yeah, because especially if you're a longer-running show, inevitably you're going to have cast changes. And what tends to happen, not always, obviously, but what tends to happen is the main actor or core actors get bored after a while, or if the show becomes a hit, they start getting better offers and they leave. But obviously you've got a brand now. You don't want to leave it. So you're going to continue it. Sometimes it works great. Sometimes it does not.
One of the most dramatic, and you mentioned this one, was Lisa Bonet and two shows that she did this to. One, The Cosby Show,
Where I'm getting so, because she did a couple of movies. I think she did Angel Heart and a couple of movies, and she started getting this in her head that she was better than this, she deserved better than this, and her, and that the Cosby Show was holding her career back.
Right. And so she moved on. And not only did she move on to a couple of movies, but to a spin-off series, A Different World.
Which she then quit after like a season and a half. And that still went on for like four seasons. So you go, okay.
Yeah. With the supporting cast.
Becoming the main cast.
Right.
One that I remember, you know, playing out in real time for me, because I was watching this show religiously at the time, was NYPD Blue and David Caruso's very tumultuous exit at the beginning of season two. Because season one, he was starting to become a star. And then between seasons, he got some movie roles. And so he thought he was going to be this big movie star and was a real problem. Luckily, they'd already had in place a storyline where they could write the John Kelly character out. And he only lasted four episodes into season two before they finally got rid of his character. To such a degree, sometimes, like when a show goes on for a while, you expect maybe some big event, this character can come back or have a guest appearance, right?
Sure.
Like at Andy's wedding in NYPD Blue in season three, he and John Kelly were great friends. So you go, okay, they have to get David Caruso back for a cameo for this. They have to. And when he wouldn't come back, they just had like a one-line explanation of why Kelly couldn't be there. And you go, that just sucks, you know?
Yeah.
It just sucks when they do that.
Well, moving again, still within the 80s. Cheers.
Yeah, that's when you brought up. Personally, I liked the change from Shelley Long to Kirstie Alley, because I didn't like Diane.
I
liked Rebecca. Yeah.
I did not like Diane toward the end. I liked her early in the series and everything like that. And
she became a real cunt near the end of her run.
She just became silly toward the end of her run. And really, well, same thing happened with Kirstie Alley.
But the thing with Shelley Long was you could tell she didn't want to be there.
Right.
Her performance showed that she's under contract. That's right. Why she's still on this show. That's the worst part, when you can tell the actor doesn't want to be here.
Right. But, you know, it was what it was. It was decent up until it hit her, and that was a dramatic, dramatic departure. Now,
oh, yeah. You know, and probably the most famous in the nerd circles, and I have a feeling you and I are going to disagree. You and I have never really discussed this deeply. I have a feeling you and I are going to disagree. Mike versus Joel. I'm a Mike guy. I think Mike was funnier. I thought he was a better actor. I'm a Mike Nelson backer for MST3K. I have a feeling you're going to go Joel, aren't you?
I hate MST3K.
No,
I hate the entire concept. I can't stand the people involved. They're all jerks. It was a stupid show, and it didn't belong on the air, and I'm glad it was canceled.
You know, someone's going to take that out of context and just rape you with it, right?
You know what? I think they both have their charm. I never really picked one over the other. I know.
Their styles were very different.
Very, very different, and I know this is geek blasphemy, but blast for me, blast for you, blast for
everyone.
Yes. But I realize this is geek blasphemy, but I never picked a side. I enjoyed them both. Drastically different styles, and you can just listening to a few riffs in a movie, you can pick out, you go, oh, that's Mike. Oh, that's Joel. You know, it doesn't matter.
Weirdly enough, though, Mike was a writer before he was on the show. So even during the Joel era, some of Mike's humor was there.
Some was there, but somebody had the power to say no and put it away.
Probably Hodgson.
Yeah. You know, but still, their delivery was vastly different, and the show was very different.
And now, I don't know how much truth there is to this, because this is like a person telling another person a story about a person, but apparently there was a little bit of, when Joel left the show, even though he, you know, did come back for the Soul Taker episode, mm-hmm. when he left the show, he didn't like the direction that they were taking it. Because film director Jeff Lieberman, when they did Squirm on the Sci-Fi Channel era, they did his movie Squirm on Mystery Science Theater, he was pissed off about it. So he didn't realize that Joel wasn't part of the show anymore. He contacted Joel, and Joel's like, I would have never done that movie. It's a good movie. I don't know why they would pick this. He's like, I don't have anything to do with this show anymore. Don't blame me, man. That sounds to me like there's still issues there, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, the absolute war between Riff Trax and Cinematic Titanic for a while.
I don't know how long that lasted, because when I saw Cinematic Titanic, they did take two shots at Riff Trax, but they were very friendly and very fun shots. And one of them was clearly not in the script either, that they couldn't get their software to work properly. And she goes, those Riff Trax guys are probably sabotaging us again. I'm like, okay, that wasn't in the script. That was an ad lib.
So, yeah, that was... But they played up the conflict, at least, even if it was friendly. And let's be honest, the writers of MST3K, after a while, started playing up the conflict as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was a major change that made a lot of people angry. Now, you mentioned Edith Bunker.
Yeah, Edith Bunker. And I refuse to call Archie Bunker's Place a spinoff. It's all in the family under a different title. It still is Edith and the kid and Archie's, and it's in the house, and Stephanie's still there, so it's the same show, just under a different title. And when Gene Stapleton decided to leave, I don't want to say it changed everything dramatically, but it was something like the heart of the show kind of left. And as and I do appreciate the fact that they didn't just like have her leave. They had her die of a stroke in her sleep and Archie find her the next day. If you're going to do it, you do it dramatically, right?
Sure.
You do it in a good way.
Well, that's the way Archie Bunker did everything.
All in the Family. Yeah, Norman Lear ran that show, well, even though he had lost control at this point. Carol O'Connor was in control at this point. But I think Archie Bunker's Place, even though it lasted another 2.5 seasons, it just wasn't the same. Archie Bunker's Place, All in the Family, just, it didn't feel right without, I mean, obviously when Mike and Gloria left, still in All in the Family, they brought in Stephanie and they brought in, I can't remember the housekeeper's name and whatnot, and you still had a good dynamic. It was just a different dynamic. And then without Edith, I don't know, I hesitate to say it didn't work, but it didn't work as well. Does that make any sense?
No, that makes perfect sense.
But then sometimes the show gets more popular. Go back to NYPD Blue. Show was really popular, good rater with David Crusoe, even better with Jimmy Smits, and even better with Sorensen. What's his face from Silver Spoons, whose name just fell out of my head? The character's Danny Sorensen, but I can remember the character's name. Ricky Schroeder.
Thank you.
Yeah. That the show keeps going. I mean, Cheers, the ratings went up after Shelley Long left.
Yes.
That doesn't always happen when an actor leaves a show. It doesn't get more popular.
Not always. No. Well, give me an idea of a show that absolutely tanked.
Well, now the actor obviously didn't leave of his own volition. He died. But look at 8 Simple Rules for Dating My Teenage Daughter. After John Ritter left, they kept the show going for another season and a half. And nobody wanted to watch it anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, the same can be said about Saturday Night Live and Jim Belushi. Ever since Jim or John?
John.
Ever since John Belushi died, nobody's wanted to watch Saturday Night Live. That shit, I just found out, is still on the air.
You know what?
Not even in reruns. They're making new ones.
I know. But to be fair, they did have Eddie Murphy later on.
Who?
So that is something.
The donkey?
They had the donkey, yes.
Sorry.
They also had Shrek, too.
Oh, that's true. They really did have Shrek.
When you get to both Shreks, because remember, Chris Farley was the original Shrek.
Mm-hmm.
So they had both Shreks, technically.
They did. Oh, my God. Isn't that... That's
frightening. You never noticed that before?
You know, that means that really Shrek was a children's movie done by a Saturday Night Live cast.
To a degree.
Meh.
Yeah, to a degree.
Well done. I enjoyed the first Shrek.
I didn't like any of them.
I liked the first Shrek, and I did like Puss in Boots.
Well, and then you have some shows that, this next one's going to be relatively obscure, but the new WKRP, the 90s version.
Mm-hmm. Which never took off.
It lasted two seasons, but yeah, it was never well rated. It was not the hit that the 70s version was. But the initial cast did not work. The initial cast, they basically did an almost cast-wide bloodbath, and about eight episodes in, almost all new characters. Then everything started to gel as a show that you just kind of realized whatever's wrong here, it's these characters don't work.
Right.
We need a new cast. And then you get the same thing with, say, comic books, creative teams. Sometimes, well, you know, a famous writer like Alan Moore leaves Swamp Thing. Rick Veitch was still able to hold quality for a while. You know, Rick Veitch was a good writer. Stephen Bissett was a good writer. They were able to hold it. And then they left, and I mean, sales-wise, no. Sales-wise, it went up, because that was the thing about Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing. Nobody was reading it then. Ah. That was funny that nobody was reading the book then. But I'm talking quality-wise, not sales-wise at this point. But then, like, another famous departure, Tasha Yar.
Oh, yes.
On Star Trek. She kind of had the David Caruso syndrome. The show is holding me back. I can be a movie star. You know, I'm Bing Crosby's granddaughter, for God's sake. I need more than this stupid Star Trek show that I only took. It's funny how they changed their stories, too. At the time she left, she only took Star Trek because it was a job and she needed a job. Now she looks back at it as this watershed moment that, you know, wow, a little bitterness wore off over the years, huh?
Yeah, slightly. But I remember that being an ugly departure, too.
Both on screen and off,
yeah.
Both in front of the camera and behind the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Because that wasn't even Skin of Evil was not made as, I mean, it was made as it, but not written as Tasha dies. When she dies, it was essentially supposed to be just, you know, average gold shirt, because it wasn't red shirts in Next Generation.
Right.
I'm just saying,
right,
for the audience that, you know, average gold shirt dies there. But she wanted out, and she wanted out now. You know, she was one of these, I don't want to finish my contract. I don't want to come to work tomorrow. Just write me out. And so it's like, well, we're killing a gold shirt. Let's kill Tasha.
There you go.
And Joseph Stefano, who wrote that episode, is not happy with it. Because he's like, if I knew we were getting rid of a main cast member, that would have been written way differently.
No doubt. You could almost tell that there was some cast bitterness there, too.
Even like Frakes and Stewart and all that. I mean, obviously their characters cared about Tasha, but yeah, you could tell there was, I don't know, something in the air. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense.
There was like a black cloud hanging over that episode, regardless of the fact that Tasha died in it.
Well, you know, there was always Stewart, the drummer for the Beatles. The fifth Beatle. I cannot remember his name. And again, people are shouting at the radio.
Hey, I can't either, so you're in good, you're on fine company.
But yeah, you know, that originally started with the Beatles and then went, you guys are going nowhere, you're just Liverpoolian idiots. I'm gonna go and make a real
thing.
Band, and we can't remember his name.
Which is kind of telling, really, you
know.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. But at the same time, it's John and Ringo and Jeff and Leroy. I think those were the Beatles. But anyway, you know,
the Sex Pistols were the same thing. Sid Vicious did not. Glenn Matlock was the bass player on the album. And then he was having some personal problems, and he also had stage fright, so he didn't like want to play the live shows. So they had Sid Vicious come in. Then the album goes to number one, and they become super famous. And I bet he was going,
I could have gotten over the stage fright, guys. Seriously.
The money would have done that. Which, to be fair, though, after Sid's death, when they got back together as the original Sex Pistols, they weren't lying. That was one of those where it was reunion, and when they brought Glenn Matlock back in, they weren't really lying, were they?
No, they weren't. They weren't at all. But, there have been a lot of, gosh, I'm trying to think. Well, you mentioned earlier some movie franchises when a major character departs. And give me an idea of what you mean.
Well, I don't know if it's so much a major character, but like a major actor. Like all of a sudden you change actors between movies. For instance, like Nightmare on Elm Street 3 to Nightmare on Elm Street 4. Nightmare on Elm Street 3, you've got this up-and-coming actress named Patricia Arquette. Then all of a sudden, she's a superstar. She's not coming back for 4.
Right.
So let's recast her with Tuesday Night. I think it was Tuesday Night that that replaced her in that one. And you go
Wednesday morning.
And you go, well, she's not bad, but honestly, until they said her name, I didn't even realize she was supposed to be the same character in Nightmare on Elm Street 4. She plays the character so wildly different, and the actress looks so different that I'm like, whoa. That's Patricia Arquette from the third movie? What the fuck? That, I think, is a disservice to the audience if you're going to do that. If you're going to replace an actor, and they're playing the same character,
mm-hmm.
they need to play it a similar way unless you come up with a reason that the character is different, like in the Stepfather movies. Terry O'Quinn is the stepfather in the first two. Then and he gets killed in both of them, but whatever, you know, it's a horror movie franchise. In the third one, it's not him. How they explained it? He got plastic surgery to avoid the cops. You go, okay, it's a stupid explanation, but it's an explanation. It's just stupid, but here's why another actor is playing him.
Josh, are you telling me they took his face off?
Yeah, he didn't have anything to do with Nicolas Cage or John
Travolta.
I know.
But God, any chance I get to use that line, it's just fun. It's especially fun to watch John Travolta try and imitate Nicolas Cage.
And vice versa.
And vice versa, yeah.
Well, one that other nerds will get, Sinclair versus Babylon 5.
Okay.
You know, you've got Sinclair in the early ones, and then you got Sheridan in the later ones. When Bruce Boxleitner came over, who was immediately identified with Babylon 5? Bruce Boxleitner.
Okay.
Not a lot of people remember Sheridan from the first two seasons. He was a very pivotal main character, but when he left, and I don't know the behind the scenes of why he left the show, but when he left, Bruce Boxleitner took over and kind of made the show his own, as, you know, the tone changed, kind of like with Van Halen and Iron Maiden. This new actor, this new lead, changed the tone.
Sure. Well, you know, when you want to talk about a show that has changed tone, let's talk about one that's changed tone 12 or 13 times, depending on who you ask. Doctor Who. I mean,
I would think that changes tone every time it changes lead actor, really.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that, you know, you've got some cases like Christopher Eccleston where they left on a nice, basically going, I came back to do this. I came back to launch this for my friend. I have done that. I am going to go on and be my British movie star self again. And they've left on their own terms in a nice way. And, you know, we get Tennant in and arguably one of the best doctors. You also have the entire reason for regenerating doctors is because the man that played the first doctor got more and more and more demanding.
Ego.
And he goes, you know, well, they're never going to do anything with me. This is a kid's show. It's a hit. I am the doctor. You can't change that. And the writers went,
want a bet?
it changed. And, you know, that was the case of the show going, okay, it's time to let this one go. And now, you know, when you have a change from Matt Smith to Capaldi, which are two vastly different actors with two vastly different acting styles and filling two vastly different roles, one being the young, kind of goofy, kind of fun, there's a little bit of a dark side to me, but hey, look, girls, I look really damn good, and I've got this really great hair.
Well, as someone who does not watch Doctor Who, let me ask this question.
Sure.
I mean, I haven't watched since the 80s. I used to watch the old episodes growing up, but I'm not a fan of the new stuff. I've tried a couple, just didn't sit with me.
Okay. Really,
if you like it, you like it. But how has changing the actors and the styles gone over with the fans? Is it one of those, I really wish you hadn't done this, or this is good to keep it fresh? How does that go over with the fans? As someone from the outside, I don't know this.
You always remember your first doctor. And I have absolutely no doubt that your first doctor will always be your favorite doctor. That's the way it usually works.
The one I remember the most, the actor, obviously, I don't remember, but Ace was the companion. This is the shot on video episodes
Baker?
From the 80s.
I think that was Tom Baker.
It was the planet of ice. They were on like an ice planet or some shit.
Long
like
scarf?
That. I don't remember.
Canine?
I don't remember off the top of my
anyway.
Head. Yeah. I just remember Ace was really cute.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, I was a teenage boy.
She was a teenage girl. It
exactly.
was a match made in heaven. But no, I understand that. And or was that the one with the celery in his pocket? I'm trying to remember who it is. Anyway, but
Dragonfire was the story. That's it. It was
yeah,
Dragonfire.
I know exactly. I know what you're talking about, and I can't.
I couldn't remember
if,
the title for a second. But
it's
yeah.
one of two doctors, and it's I'm losing geek points. Let's move on. But yeah, like when you have a switch from Matt Smith to Capaldi, you have an older gentleman playing a very, very, very dark, uncaring doctor. It's the first uncaring doctor we've seen in a long time.
Not counting John Hurt?
Who? What?
Oh, are you one of those that doesn't, that's the didn't ever happen shit?
I don't know.
John Hurt one?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Never mind. Go ahead.
No, actually, no. John Hurt, I mean, one of Capaldi's favorite lines in one of these was, he's trying to come up with a title for his companion, Clara. And one gentleman goes, oh, is this your carer? Because he is a dramatically older gentleman. And he goes, yes, yes, she's my carer. She cares so that I don't have to. That's a dark fucking line right there. Versus Matt Smith, who played a great doctor and had a dark side to him that would come out every once in a while, but he was still kind of goofy and funny and very Chaplin-esque in his doctor, versus Capaldi, who doesn't move around a lot and plays it a whole lot. It's almost
more
frightening.
Serious.
It's more serious, darker, and almost he's the doctor that will frighten you because you're not quite sure anymore whether he's going to save the earth or not. You're
okay.
Pretty sure he is, but you're not sure. But anyway, so you have dramatic switches in tone like that that are a good thing and are a worldwide event.
Well, and then you've got stuff on a much smaller scale. For instance, the reason that we're talking about this topic is you are no longer on Lost in the Static after tonight.
I was wondering why there was a giant elephant in the room.
Oh, your cat is not that big.
You're right. She's adorable, though. No.
But yeah, this is your final episode.
I've gotten some questions on the countdown.
Which is what I wanted.
Yeah, I know. I've gotten some questions on the countdown, and last week was number one, and this week is obviously zero. This is my last show. I did announce it on Facebook a while back, but I know a lot of people missed that. But yeah, I've been doing this and I want to
do this for almost 4 years, just shy of four years,
just shy of 4 years. But I want to make this clear right here with you on this episode. I am not leaving angry.
Oh no. I mean,
there have been, you know, there are some people that will tie it in with other events around and stuff like that. This is something that I've been mulling over for over 6 months now. Something that I've been talking with Dawn about.
2-3 months ago?
Yeah.
Hence the countdown?
Yeah, hence the countdown. And I've gone about as far as I can go with Static, and I feel like the show isn't growing anymore, and I don't want to be the reason it doesn't grow. And I think you've told me ideas that you have for shows in the future
and
for
you disagree
directions
with,
that you're going to take.
Fair enough.
That I disagree with, but at the same time, you've also told me some that you have plans for this show in particular, since knowing that I was leaving, that, I think you have a good vision for the show. And I think Lost in the Static can grow again. Plus, I have some other directions that I want to go in life. I've done Lost in the Static for almost 4 years. Prior to that, I did SaterCast and working with Jason Oblivion on his stuff. And I've been doing a lot of the same stuff, sitting and talking into a microphone without a script and trying to teach about things for 10 years at least. And I would like to branch out. I'd like to do some stuff with YouTube. I'd like to do some gaming stuff. Dawn and I, my wife Dawn and I, have some ideas of stuff that we're going to do together. Don't worry, I will post. If you don't follow Lost in the Static on Facebook,
there's Scott Murray.
Yeah, there's Scott Murray, S. Murray 75 or Sater Scotty. I don't remember which one, but you can look me up under either one of those. Just Facebook.com.
Or just go
slash.
Off my friends list. He's in that.
Or just
too.
Go off Josh's friends list. And I will put links to everything that I do. But yeah, I'm looking to do something a little bit brighter, a little bit more positive, and a little bit more scripted and a little bit more fun. And I'm not saying that I haven't had fun doing Lost in the Static, because we have, but I'm looking to do something with a different tone myself.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's completely understandable.
But that's what I wanted to get out right now was, this was not a big fight between you and I. You and I are...
That's it! You're fired, motherfucker! No.
You and I are not leaving... We're still friends. I'm still going to talk to him, and you have shows that you've even asked me already. Will you come back for this? And there's a couple that I think I will, but...
Well, and then I would like to announce... I don't want to say replace you, because that sounds bad, but you know what I mean.
Right, you're getting a new host.
New hosts. One of the changes I'm making is I'm going to stop making this a two-person thing, and I'm bringing in an international flavor as well as a gender switch. I'm bringing in up-and-coming comic artist Sarah Hanley. Hanley, not Hadley. She was a little confused that if people saw it in print, they'd be confused and go, nepotism much? No. We spell and pronounce our names differently. So, Sarah Hanley. I'm bringing in Dustin Kidd, who you know from Canada, to give a little international flavor. And very introspective, deep film critic Glenn Criddle from the UK. So that'll bring in, when we're talking pop culture, it'll now have an international feel. Plus, we will have a female perspective as well. Sarah, not Dustin.
It's hard to tell every now and then. But, I'm looking forward to these shows because I know these people. While I have not sat down and had a conversation with Sarah, I've seen her comedy. I've seen links that you've put up, with her and stuff like that. And she seems very entertaining.
She's her art is really cool. Only comic nerds are going to get this. Her art style is very Kevin Maguire Justice League era or comic art. And I'm working with her on a couple other projects. And Glenn Criddle does the nasties reviews and whatnot, where he goes through all the video nasties. And I think he's still on the S3s at this point and whatnot. And he's a very much more thoughtful, kind of quiet, reserved film critic that looks into themes of films and stuff. And then Dustin, is kind of hyperactive and whatnot. And then there's me, of course. And then Sarah, she's a female comic nerd who's a comic artist. So she brings a different perspective. And I think it'll change things up. And I've already got the first couple of topics planned out. And it'll be, I'm not going to call it the new Lost in the Static. It's just Lost in the Static 214. That'll be the first one. It'll just be Lost in the Static 214. We'll be with the new cast, if you will.
And, I wish you the best of luck, and I hope that Static can grow in the way that it did when we first started this, and
dude,
see that,
those early episodes are fucking terrible.
Those early episodes were terrible, and I have absolutely no doubt that you're gonna find some speed bumps at 214 through 224. You're gonna find some speed bumps and hammer them out, but stick with it, folks. Like I've told you before, first 10 episodes of any podcast, throw them out. Because
we didn't even have an opening at the beginning, Scott.
Right. I know. But that's what I'm saying is I think Lost in the Static is going to grow again with these three new people and with this new direction. And I support it 100%. I really do. And I hope that my stuff, whichever direction I decide to go, and I may kind of disappear from social media for a little while
as far as I'm concerned, you still have access to the Lost in the Static Facebook page to post your stuff. You know, I'm not going to go, well, fuck him then, you know, yep, admin access gone. No.
Right. That's part of the point of this is we're friends. That's
what I mean. Yeah, when you get this new stuff, you can post it on that page.
Oh, I'll let you know.
To let people know to follow it.
But also, yeah. And I guess what I've been doing this whole time is going, I've heard the rumor mill. I've heard the conspiracy mill. Squish it.
What is there a big you and I are fighting and whatnot?
Yeah.
Because I haven't heard a lot of that. Mainly what I've been getting is, what the fuck is Scott counting down to? And I'm like, and, I'm not telling you. That's why he's counting down to something.
Exactly. And it's we're not fighting. I've been getting a lot of anti-Josh fans lashing out and going,
sure there's a lot.
It's about time you get rid of that jerk and you take Lost in the Static and go in whatever new direction and blah. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm not taking it. It's his show. And I've signed everything over to him and everything like that. But I'm squishing that rumor mill of Scott and Josh now hate one another. It's not there. I'll admit there are times, Hadley, and you know it as well as I do, when you push every button I have and I want to cock punch you.
Me? But I am the sweetest, nicest person that you can ever meet.
And there are times when my zen-like, steadfast attitude of optimism drives you insane. We do fight. I'm not gonna bullshit. We have nearly had knockdown, drag-out fights over stuff. And while that has its place and while it can be entertaining, it can only go so far. And I'm looking forward to the new blood.
And I think the new blood is looking for a chance to see arrogantly enough if they can fill your shoes.
I'm sure they can. They're, you know, they are a very able cast. So,
but like, you know, with you leaving, I didn't want to just, okay, here's a new guy and it's the same thing. I saw this as an opportunity, and I just, you know, if Scott's leaving, then I'll use this to go into a different direction.
So I'm asking those that are listening to the show and saying to themselves right now, well, Scott's never coming back. I'm never listening again. Please
give Sarah, Dustin, and Glenn a chance.
Yeah. Give those three a chance. Give them 15 episodes. That's all I ask. The first 10 so that they can iron out those speed bumps and find their groove and work that out. It's basically a new podcast. Give them a chance. And then 5 more. And on that last 5, if you don't like it, then go
fair
on.
Enough.
That's fair. And I appreciate the support. But yeah, no hate here. It's just that it's time for the show to grow. And I think it will grow more without me in it.
Well, you'll still technically be in it because the stinger we're going to play in a minute, I'm still keeping. So you'll still technically be there.
Well, that's like...
It's how Ed Glazer is still technically in every episode of What the Fuck because he's still in the intro.
Exactly.
But so I want to take this opportunity to say, you will be missed. You're still my friend. I love you like a brother. And this is no detriment to anyone else, but you know, you can't be replaced. I can just put someone in your spot.
Fair enough.
That's no detriment to them. But then you'll be doing this even next week.
And don't worry, folks. I will be back soon.
That's a threat. That's a threat.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.
Zero. And in the words of Cyrano de Bergerac, bon panache.